Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very 290th episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, a podcast about board games and the people who love board games. I'm joined, as ever, by Matt.
Hello.
And we're going to tell you about one, two, maybe three board games.
If you're lucky. Who knows?
Who knows what's going to be contained in this exciting grab bag? We don't even know yet.
No.
We know a little bit. I got no preamble banter, Matt.
Okay, that's okay. Don't worry about nothing. Don't worry about it.
What have I done this morning? You know, I've written some words. Some people were cutting down a tree earlier.
Yeah.
You know, they only did like a couple of branches of the tree and they left the rest of it just chilling.
It's all been popping off. It's been an exciting time.
Is it? Has it?
Yeah, no.
Is this what the listeners want to hear?
I'm drinking an aloe vera drink that I bought.
From, what's happened to us?
It's got bits in it. Well, I don't know. You say what's happened to us. What's happened to me? I mean, I've been 40 for a while now. Welcome to the club, buddy.
I'm not 40?
But soon you will be. And then your life will just be extension cables and grayness. It's fine. You find your own fun in the chaos. And speaking of which, board games. What a hobby. Tom.
Hi.
You told me a little while ago that you played a game called Emberleaf.
I did play a little
game. Like you to tell me now about it.
It's not a little game. It's a big game.
I was just saying little in the, like, you know.
And you know, like...
Like a meaningless word.
The fact that it's a big game and not a little game might be my problem with it.
Oh.
Yeah. We're going to come back to that in just a little bit. Emberleaf is a game designed by Frank West, who you might know for such games as Isle of Cats, Race to the Raft. But he's joined by a co-designer this time around, James Tomblin, who also does some of the art, and Frank does some of the art. It's co-designed down to the wazoo.
Gosh.
Down to the wazoo? Up in the wazoo?
It depends where you are in relation to the wazoo.
It's wazooed
out. The geographical position of the wazoo is dependent on the statement.
This is a strange game. It is a quote-unquote card dancing game, Matt. In front of you on the table, you're going to have, picture it in your mind's eye, a giant board. That board has got lots of spaces for hexagons that you're going to place on that board.
I've never imagined anything like this. This is absurd.
Oh my goodness. It's a whole new idea. There's also on this board, you're going to have little meeples, like cute, chunky, screen-printed animal meeples that are going to wander around this board, establishing those little tiles, putting little towns on the board. But then in front of each player, you have your own personal player board. Oh my God, imagine that.
What?
That has space for like six cards, sort of a row of three at the top and a row of three at the bottom. So they're just empty spaces right now.
Right.
And the way that the core action of the game works is on your turn, you are going to play a card from your hand onto this grid. You can put it anywhere you want on your little 2x3 grid. There's more spaces you'll get access to later on. You're going to pop it down anywhere that you want. And then you're going to trigger the abilities on that card, which might be get three rock, or get one wood, or obtain a card from the shop, or something like that, right? You're going to get these different abilities on the cards. Now, the thing is that almost all of these actions are just one time. You just trigger it and you get something.
Mm-hmm.
And so your early turns in this game feel kind of like dull. They sort of feel a little flavorless because you're just playing a card and getting one thing. What gives? Well, the secret sauce of Emberleaf is that the other thing you can do on your turn is instead of playing a card, you can slide all of your cards. So you'll slide your whole grid one space to the left, and many of these cards will have a little arrow on them that says, when you slide me, I do a little thing.
Oh.
So the idea is you're setting up these sort of like basic actions to get you basic resources, and then you're sliding them along to turn those resources into fancy things. Or even you're setting off little chain reactions where sliding one card gets you a rock, and then another card lets you build a thing out of rocks, and then another card means that you activate the thing that you built, and yada, yada, yada. These examples are bad.
When you're sliding cards, are you like sliding all the cards at once? Are they sliding onto top of the other cards, are all sliding along their position one space?
They're all sliding one space.
Okay.
Like a wave.
They're six cards is a good enough for that, because I feel like, and I mean, again, this is big hand privilege, but I feel like my hands are big enough to comfortably slide six cards at the same time.
One finger on each card.
Well, just my fist, like my hand, like just sort of splat on it like a big frog.
And just smoosh it along. Yeah. The thing is that I'm going to spoil your fun here, because the game actually recommends that you slide your cards one at a time.
Oh, that does make sense.
And I agree.
Because you have to do things.
And if you just slide them all at once, it literally says in the manual, there's a temptation to do this because it's hella satisfying,
mm-hmm.
but you're not gonna want to do it because you have to slide these cards individually because each one of them is gonna trigger an effect which might trigger another effect and yada yada yada. It is super modern Euro design in that it is combo. It's all about making these big exciting numbers go up.
But Tom,
yes,
you said there's only six spaces for these cards to be in.
Correct.
What happens when they go off the edge?
Well, nothing. Unless they have a special power that says when they drop off, when they fall off the end of their board, then they'll have, some of them will have powers that trigger if you do that. And there's something that's really interesting that kind of happens quite early on in this game, which is that you want to make sure that certain slots of your board are free because you want to make sure you can play those slide off and immediately cash them in cards, like immediately. You want them in those leftmost sockets.
Right.
But then other cards that like get something every time you slide down, you want to make sure that they slide down the board gradually.
Yes.
So that eventually they will be in those sockets. And you have this very strange puzzle of like not being able to just take any resource you want. Having to specifically play a card for it means that you don't want to waste turns where you're just crunching things down, sliding without purpose. You want to make sure that you're always getting as much juice as you can.
Are there ways to get these cards off of the little like slidey tableau in any other way?
No.
No, okay.
You just got to slide them.
So it really is just a case of going, well, how long do I want these things to be on the board for?
Yeah.
And how can I manipulate that?
It's a kind of programming thing. Like you're sort of adding in these sort of like steps in a chain and trying to make sure that your machine can continually run smoothly.
I mean, honestly, I think it's exciting that somebody's finally made an engine builder around the song. There were three in the bed and the little one said, roll over.
Yeah, that's. I believe that's what the manual says, right?
I'm sure that's the only inspiration here.
The thing about this is that you have, you know, I've been talking about this little, this card dancing system.
But there is a big hexagon map in front of you.
There's also
I remember that from the start.
Yes!
Chekhov's hexagons.
Chekhov's large hexagons. Essentially, this board acts as a kind of tile placement situation where the resources that you're gathering, the rocks and the stones and the honey and whatever, you're using those to build tiles out onto the main board.
I'm just thinking, you don't want to be building much out of rocks and honey, I'll tell you that. That's bad engineering right
I
there.
I think the resources are like radishes or like turnips.
Okay.
Turnips, I think. Turnips, rocks, wood, and honey. Those are the four things that little tiny critters make their houses out of.
I mean, fair enough. Fair enough. I wouldn't buy a house like that.
I wouldn't buy a house made of honey.
No.
But you're building out these little spaces, like tiles onto the main board. That's what you're kind of getting these resources to do, because there's a kind of, not area control, but like essentially in each of these different areas on the board, you're placing tiles, and the more things you put into an individual area, the more points you score for it. And you're also putting little woodland creatures to live in these houses, and putting those little creatures gives you little bonuses that will help you refine your strategy even more. And then there are lots of these different, they're called clearings. There are lots of these different spaces to put these tiles in, and you have to move between them using your sort of big chunky I am here piece.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, there are these bandits that get in your way and you need to smack them with swords. And so those are the kind of two halves of the game. There's the building out nice little towns side of the game,
mm-hmm.
and there's the smacking these banners with swords and accruing big sets of those because they're worth points.
Okay.
And I like...
And are you doing the smacking things using the card actions as well?
Absolutely.
Okay, so everything is the cards.
Everything's the cards.
Okay,
the cards are their money.
Mm-hmm.
It's all on the cards. And you will be buying new cards for that sort of deck that you're building. It's not really a deck, it's just a big hand. You're buying new cards from this market that will kind of pivot your strategy in certain ways.
Okay.
So like I had a guy that meant for every little sword icon on any card on my board, he would let me do a big attack. And so and he'd let me do that every time I slid him around. So every single turn I was trying to get swords on the board, no matter what, and then I was trying to slide him from top to bottom, whacking everything along the way. That's the loop. And I like a lot about Emberleaf. Like I think this card system is really sharp and it's very like combo-tastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, immediately you're cooking up these little schemes. There's something really satisfying about watching your engine run, but
mm-hmm.
you could probably feel it coming. It's a lot of crunch and it's really long.
Right.
Like this is something that I thought it was just me and that we were just playing really long games of this, and then I looked on Board Game Geek and apparently it's a universal concern that people are spending too long playing Emberleaf.
I have seen I thought the news was just fear-mongering, but I have heard a lot of complaints about this in
kids these days, the
national news.
They're spending too long sliding an otter down the board.
They're getting zonked out on otters, sliding animals around so they can defeat fictional banditos.
And I think that this is maybe just the case of, well, maybe it's just too much of a good thing. Like the satisfaction of this game is really high. Like it's really sort of like fun and crunchy this puzzle that they present you with.
But for you to feel like it, the sessions are very long, there must be a point where you feel like it's time to wrap it up now.
Yes.
Because otherwise you just don't notice, right?
Yeah, I feel like this is the kind of thing where you want to get your engine off the ground and you want to see it run for like a little bit of time,
yeah,
and then you want the game to end. And instead, because of the way that like you get new cards in this game, you often front load it. You'll often get all the kind of pieces of your engine very early on in the game,
mm-hmm,
and then you just kind of like run it for quite a while.
Mm.
And I found myself feeling like I wish that that part of it was just a little shorter.
Right.
It got you up and running, and then you got to enjoy that sweet spot of brrr, all these points are happening, and then it was over. And that was especially exacerbated in the games that I've played of it. So I'll say that most of the times, 3 out of the 4 times I've played this game,
yep,
we've ended it early because people have had to go home,
right,
or because we've just been like, you know what? We've seen enough here.
Yeah, you're not really allowed to lock guests in your house just to make them finish a board game.
And they said,
it's frowned upon.
And you know what exacerbates this is the fact that because I've played it 4 times and I introduced it to a new group each time, the 4th time I played this, I was just monstering everybody. And there's something about like having a really long combo-tastic game where you're sat there on your turn and you're doing all of this stuff. You're going crazy abacus style.
Yes.
Making a big puzzle, click into place beautifully.
And someone else is like, I got 2 honey.
I'm going to move this thing and I'm going to get a single wood.
Yep.
That's not a real problem with the game, question mark? I don't know.
I think that the thing I always say is like, you know, every game should be fun when you're losing.
Yeah.
Like, and I think if you can't find a way to have fun just doing a little thing on your own, then it's...
Which I guess it is still fun to do your best in this game, to like try and pile your engine as best you can.
But I guess
and it's not like it's disruptive in the sense that if me winning doesn't prevent someone else from doing
no, but I okay. guess if you're having to take turns, mm-hmm, like if you're having to, you know, it's fine. I find it's always slightly a problem when you have a game where sometimes you have a turn that's just popping off and other people don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's like fine as long as everyone gets their moment, right? Or like most people get a turn where it's, yes, like, oh, this is where everything's happening for me.
This is my crazy
but
turn.
But if you have a game where like one person is constantly popping off and other people are just not, then you basically end up having a game where instead of playing a board game, like other people feel like they're playing a fraction of a board game.
Yes.
You know, like you're playing half of the game and the other 3 players are like playing like 15%.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, the social contract of playing a board game is like, can I look at my phone? Am I allowed to look at my phone while you're doing your big
turn?
Your
turn is in 25 minutes.
Yeah, in a way that's like, what are we doing here? You know, so yeah. I think that's like, it's a weird one. I think it's not entirely a fault with the game, but at the same time, it's like, what is it? It's a problem. It's not ideal.
I think I don't want that to make it sound like I really don't like Emily, because I think that the core of it, I think I find really enjoyable. I think that mechanic of sliding your cards around, picking up bonuses, I think it's executed really, really
well. I have some boring questions.
You can have a boring question.
So you have these 6 slots that you're sliding things along.
Yeah,
so a card played at the beginning will be in play for like, you know, 5-6 slides.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, 3 slides, because it's like...
Okay, that's what I was trying to work out.
Independent.
That's what I was trying to work out. That's question number one. Boring question number two about the game is, when they slide off, do they go back into your hand?
Yes.
Ah, okay, yeah. Okay. So you really are kind of building up like a small like deck of things.
They call it your fellowship.
Okay.
But I think, and you know, I could be wrong. People in the comments of this podcast might be crying out. But I believe that at base, there's only sort of 4 opportunities you get to add a new card into that stash.
Right, okay.
And you know how I said when you build out these tiles onto the main board, you can house little animals?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get new cards. But it's the first animal of each kind that you house, which you always have the option to do. You can pick whichever animal you want.
Mm.
So your first 4 tile placements... could be your first 4 new cards.
That could be the deck.
And that's your game done. And that can happen pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, it's not your game done, but it's your strategy somewhat set in stone,
yes,
from that point
forward. For better or worse.
And you know, there are benefits to saying, I'm going to hold off for now and I'm going to use my card acquisition later when the market's looking pretty juicy. But the market's quite slow to cycle. I don't know. There's like a little edge of it that I think is a little imperfect, and I almost want it just... I want the crunched up, condensed
version
of this game.
It's interesting because I thought... When I thought that the cards might be sliding off and disappearing for good, it reminded me a little bit of a game we talked about a little while called A Wild Venture, which was
equally
kind of like a tableau engine building thing.
And it was a cozy critter game.
Cozy critters.
Mm.
But that I enjoyed the fact that in that one, the nature of the card play meant that you would be putting these powerful characters into play and powerful equipment, but then you would be using them and they would leave.
Yes.
And I enjoy the fact that it kind of had this sense of like, ah, I thought there might be some overlap there, but if they're coming back into your hand, then it's less of a kind of like and you have this engine you build and then the engine slowly disappears and more of a like a cycle of like perfecting this loop.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that once in the last game I played, I went full in on swords, as I mentioned earlier, and I had that engine up and running from like round two, and there wasn't much extra I could do to make it run better.
Got almost, it.
Other than clear out the spots that gave me a little bit more runway for playing these cards out. So I like Emberleaf. I think it's nice. I had a very pleasant time playing it. I don't think I'm going to keep it around.
That's fair.
I think I'd probably recommend it at the lower end of the player count as well. I think it goes up to like five players. Yeah. And I feel like you're going to be sat playing that game for like 3 hours.
I feel like you take playing games pretty seriously as well. Like you're not like, you know, slapping people when they're having a chat. But at the same time, you know, most time we're having games, we get on with games.
Yeah,
we
play pretty efficient.
We play a game, right? We're not going to be dibbling and dabbling. Whereas I feel like often if I'm playing something like this that is cozy and nice, mm-hmm. like that's often the environment where I think, you know, let's chill, let's, you know, get another cup of tea, let's take our time. And that's when, if games are very long, then it can sort of stretch out.
Yeah, it can sprawl out in a way that's a little ungainly. I think that it's probably the sweet spot is 2 or 3 for this one, if you're going to go for it, if you want a cozy time, if you want a combo-y engine builder, maybe if you're not as AP prone as I am, just sat there looking at this engine being like, I'm going to juice this weasel for all it's worth.
You need the vibes alarm.
Yeah, you need the vibes
alarm. Just hit the clock and say vibes, and then you immediately have to do something.
Next up, we're going to talk about Roth. This is an area control game designed by Manny Tremblay with art by Manny Tremblay, published by Chip Theory Games. And Matt, you did a review of this one a while ago.
A little while ago. And we did say in the video that we would talk about it on the podcast at some point.
And here we are.
Here we are. We are men of our words.
Talking about a game on a podcast as promised.
Yes, as was promised by our forefathers.
If you have not seen the video, then Matt, it's going to tell you about what this game is and what you do in it.
Yes, I am. Well done, Tom. Thank you for so succinctly explaining the concepts. what this game does is basically you have a little map in front of you and you're putting little characters onto a map and you're moving them around to try and take control of areas. You want to have majority control of things, and there are ways that you can be removing other people's pieces by attacking them. But all of the action in the game is dice drafted actions. So you have a handful of these dice which have a distribution of different actions on. There are 4 different actions you can do, 2 of which are rarer, being on just one side of the die, and the other 2 are more common, being on 2 sides of the dice. But you are rolling them and then taking it in turns to pick out these dice, and then after you've done that, you will have this open information. You can see what people can do, and you all take it in turns to do a thing. After all the dice have been played and you've done your moving troops, reinforcing more troops on the map, attacking people, or getting some more resources to use special powers, because there are different factions. There are 5 different factions in the game. It's an astoundingly colourful neon thing, brightly coloured pieces. It's actually it was almost a problem to film, in the fact that like filming it normally under normal light, the colours looked just too bright.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know what to do. I almost thought for the first time of like reverse grading it and trying to like remove some of the colour from the footage.
Make it duller.
But then I was like, well, that's not really... I don't know. It's astoundingly neon. In a way that's very fun.
Yeah.
But basically, yeah, you play through rounds, and at the end of the round, when everyone has done their actions, you just look to see who gets points for being in control of areas, and then who gets bonus points for other little criterias to do with, like, are you completely dominating an area? Do you have special units in the area that get you more points for having them there, etc.? And the game ends when someone has 30 points.
Classic. Root style.
Absolutely classic. And, you know, in terms of it, you've got neon fantasy, you've got neon dwarves, you've got neon orcs, you've got neon elves.
I don't think this game is fantasy. Like, it says it's fantasy, but it's too neon to be
there
fantasy.
There aren't colours like that in the real world, Tom.
Not in the fantasy world, though. Fantasy is like green and brown.
Maybe not.
I think...
I think for somebody who's only just watched one of the Lord of the Rings films recently, about a month ago.
Listen,
I think you're very rapidly becoming an expert on fantasy now. This Lord of the Rings has gone straight to your head.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings didn't have any hot pink, but maybe it should.
Maybe it should have done.
I'm actually watching Lord of the Rings 2, the sequel, and Lord of the Rings 3, you're going to the cinema? The other one, in the cinema.
Oh.
And I'm actually doing something quite ill-advised because I'm watching the extended versions of both.
No, I think it'll be fine. We talked about this.
I'm in there for like 7.5 hours.
Buddy, you'd just be in here for 7.5 hours doing something else.
That's very
true. Like watching Survivor or playing video games.
But that's at least there's some variety in those activities.
Sure.
This is just dwarves.
Sure, when you're at home, you don't have to piss into a bottle. But, you know, apart from that, it's exactly the same. Also, mate, there'll be tons of variety. It's not just dwarves. There's loads. So much stuff happens in those films, man. I don't even want to say what you've got to look forward to.
Yeah, don't know what I've got.
You've got some exciting characters.
What I've heard a lot about, when people have been like hype to hear me watch Lord of the Rings, they go, oh, you've not seen Denethor yet.
Nope.
And they just keep talking about Denethor. And I don't know. I've heard about tomatoes.
Right?
That's what I've heard about.
Honestly, Denethor and tomatoes. I'm going to get into trouble now, but I can't even remember who Denethor is. So I'm sure if I watch the film again, I'd be like, Oh, you're going to have a great time. But yeah, I think that neon candy fantasy is what I'd say.
Okay.
I think that maybe for our own safety, they'd sometimes put a little color dampener, saturation nullifier on fantasy to stop us from getting too much. But also, I can give you examples of very neon-y fantasies.
Yeah?
Kingdoms of Amalur, one of my favorite 7 out of 10 video games of all time.
That is a pure 7 out of
10. That had some really good bright colors in it.
That's very much a 7 out of 10 in brackets positive rather than a 7 out of 10 in brackets negative.
I don't think there's any such thing as a negative 7 out of 10. A negative 7 out of 10 is a 6 out of 10. I used to work for magazines, trust me. it's absolute nonsense, but also it's completely true.
Yeah.
Guild Wars as well. Anyway, you're allowed colors.
You're allowed colors.
That's a sidebar to say we've decided that it's okay to have colors. Although I do get what you mean.
Yeah, I guess what I mean is that like
it you want mud.
Feel like a fantasy game.
I will agree that the theming in this is not necessary.
Yeah.
I like the art. I like the colors, but it doesn't feel like there's any sense of real like place or things.
Yeah, it's quite abstract.
It is. Although you do get the feeling of the actions. To me, it's almost like a bit like in the same way that when you're playing Gloomhaven, that the names of the moves give you a physical image of like what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're being like, yeah, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Where this has like, you know, you're firing arrows across the whole map and destroying everything. You're like, you're infecting someone and they die and then one of your people come back. It's evocative of other things in a way that makes it mechanically evocative, even if in terms of theme or anything like that, it's not really trying to do that. And that
I agree. I don't think it's shooting to necessarily be like a super thematic game, but it's like thematic enough in the spaces where it needs to be.
Yeah. And the reason that I like this game is because it really does tickle that itch of having that sort of game where you want to see brightly colorful things being moved around a map and destroying each other and then winning and having someone going, that person's a problem, we should go and attack them.
We should hit them with our sword.
Which is like one of the key sorts of games that people want to play, especially if people don't play games that often. Or they go, I like board games. Mm-hmm. They want to play either something they know or they want to play something that looks a bit like this.
They want to have something that's kind of spawned from the murky pit of Risk. That, you know, they want something that, like, kind of...
They want
of...
to play Risk. They think they want to play Risk. I almost had this as a line in the script, but then I ended up going on a digression and ended up cutting the whole thing because I was like, this is just... No. But people think they want to play Risk.
Right. But people like the idea of Risk rather than the reality of
exactly,
Risk.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And so often people will go, ooh, can we play something like this? Mm-hmm. And I realize there aren't actually that many games that do that. For that reason, I really enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed it as a kind of like very kind of chill Saturday afternoon, chips and dips, playing a game, fighting each other sort of thing. And it went down really well with groups that I played it with. It was easy to teach, easy to get going. And yeah. I had a lot of fun with it. I enjoyed it. I definitely found that there was some like fuzziness around the edge in terms of like sometimes having games where you could really demolish people if you looked at the state of the game and manipulated it effectively without people knowing what you were doing. And then it's been interesting furthering on from that to see some of the reactions to the review that we've had in comments and stuff. And like people actually like, you know, I can see one of the criticisms that people have is people saying, oh, I'm really surprised you like this because we found the game really unbalanced. And that's something that I've seen a bunch of people saying. This is an interesting side effect of the fact that I try not to look at what anyone's saying about games when I'm reviewing them because it will taint my brain and it will make me second guess myself or change my own opinion
sure
in a way that is just not healthy for critics to do, especially when usually if you go and read what people think online, often their opinions are already being formed by other critics who have told them things, etc.
Yeah.
Rather than just, you never know if it's someone's their opinion or a secondhand opinion. If you're not careful, you can end up with opinion sludge.
Yeah, and with board games especially, there's a real specific phenomena of people backing things on Kickstarter and willing them to be excellent.
100%.
So you get these reviews that are people really glowing, and they mention exactly what products they have acquired alongside this review.
So I like to try and keep a distance and just stick with my own gut. And then afterwards, after the deed is done and it's out in the wild, I will then listen to what other people think and find that interesting sometimes. And sometimes I find myself very much aligning with what everyone thinks.
Mm.
Other times I don't. I remember one of my first reviews was Takenoko, and I thought that game kind of sucked. Yeah. I still think that game kind of sucks.
It's all right.
People loved it. It's fine. They were mad when I came out of nowhere and was like, this beloved thing is not good.
Matt, it's got a cute panda and bamboo.
I didn't even know it was beloved. And on the other hand,
Officer.
Frosthaven, I felt very anxious about putting that review up because I had no idea really what the reception had been.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was a relief to see that other people had been a bit lukewarm with it as well.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of ready to get my ass kicked on the internet for that.
Especially because for Frosthaven, I feel like the audience that's catering towards is real big brain Gloomhaveners.
Yeah.
And personally, I don't think, I'm speaking for myself and maybe you, I don't know, but I don't consider myself a big brain Gloomhavener. I'm a vibes Gloomhavener.
I'm a bit of both, but I don't know. I had anxiousness about that. And, occasionally we find that our audience aligns with us. Occasionally it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to talk about this because of the fact that Roth was an interesting one, that I really enjoyed it. I went away and I played it a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
But you played it once with me, Tom, but
you
really didn't like it.
No.
And that is, it's one of those things where it would have been great. And I think people will be like, well, why didn't Tom come in the review and say why he didn't like it? But it's that tricky position of the fact that I think I would feel the same as you. I wouldn't want to be a part of a review as a two-header having just played a game once.
Yeah, and especially because that one play of it that we played was so wonky.
Yes.
It was an incredibly rough play of that game that kind of, I think it sort of soured me on it for good in a way.
Well, that's fair.
Because I think that we, essentially there was a situation that we had in that game where Matt got incredibly powerful incredibly quickly and won the game in four turns.
Yeah.
Something like that. And I think the main problem that I had with it was it felt like, as people have said online, it felt unbalanced.
Right.
It felt like the powers that you were deploying were sufficiently juiced that there was nothing that me or the other person playing the game could really do to possibly stop you from getting that win. And later on, it was kind of I've also looked online and I've seen people have said that there were two things. Thing number one, that the faction you were playing was apparently errated to work differently.
Right.
And the rules have been changed after that. But also the faction that I was playing is kind of routinely understood to be really underpowered and underbalanced. And I found it really fascinating, looking at Roth online, there's tons of threads on BoardGameGeek of people house ruling this game. And I think that's people really want to like it.
Interesting.
People really want to love it. But they also find that some of the abilities are just a little too overtuned. And I think that was the main thing that put me off of it, is that first play of it just felt just too silly in a way.
I hear you.
And I don't mind silly games. I really like Cosmic Encounter or whatever.
Exactly.
But I don't think that this game is fitting in that niche. It's still trying to be kind of toothy and competitive and have some real grit to it. But I felt like anything I could have done in that game was almost completely void because from turn one, just there was this explosion of power and suddenly you had all of the great scoring positions.
I think we had an unfortunate
A cursed combo conflagration
of obviously one of the rules that we were using at the time was now being changed in errata because it was not right in the manual or wasn't right on the card. But also the fact that I played it a bunch and we had an interesting board setup. So I took advantage of it very quickly and the game was just over immediately.
It was
one of those things where it's a tricky one in the fact that you were understandably then soured from it and didn't want to play it again. Fair enough. And lots of people, I'm sure, would have similar reactions if they were sitting down to play something that they thought would be a toothy, like,
yeah,
tactical game. And so it's like super valid, and that's why I wanted to talk about this on the podcast, because it's one of those things where, like, it's not fair to have someone in a review, it feels like a little bit more fixed in stone, and to have someone stand up on a pedestal and say, these are my thoughts as part of that, yeah, when they don't feel like they 100% are, like, concrete on it.
No.
And from it was like a game we played like months ago as well.
Yeah, and I especially didn't feel necessarily that confident in calling it unbalanced,
right,
in a review when I've only played it once.
100%. And I if I felt the same, I wouldn't want to do something. But it is really interesting, actually, because I think that, like, there's definitely, you know, there are errata for it, and I found it really interesting looking at the spread of people talking about balance, and it was an interesting mix of some people being like, I can't believe this is so unbalanced, and other people being like, we love this game, we've played it like countless times, and it's very interesting to me. And the fact that, like, I do agree that, like, some of the powers, like, are very powerful.
Yes.
And it may be unbalanced. But I find it interesting in the fact that, like, I really didn't ever approach it as, like, a serious, like, tactical, like...
Sure.
I was always approaching it as something a bit more, like, you're not actually rolling dice. You're not playing Risk. You're not, like, rolling dice and attacking and stuff. But I did feel it was that much more, like... We're moving people around a map and we got to get them because they're too powerful, etc. Yes. In the same vein as, like, Cosmic Encounter.
Right. And I think the sort of the dice-based core of it does do a good job of trying to push you towards that mindset, in the sense that one thing I really like about the game is that focus on it being a tactical proposition rather than a strategic one.
Yeah.
There is obviously some strategy to the fact that you'll have powers. When am I going to trigger them across the course of the game? How am I going to build up my strength? But the fact that the turn by turn is determined by these dice, I think, is a really great way of, as you're pointed out in the review, keeping people in that tactical space, but also taking out some of the bad vibes,
yeah,
of making sure that you're rolling these dice, and it encourages immediate aggression from everyone, which takes out some of that, like, nastiness that can brew under the surface of area, yeah, control games when people start making these alliances and things sort of, you know, become more political or diplomatic. This is just, no, you're going to fight your neighbors from turn one.
Yep. Yeah.
And if someone's in the lead, you go and fight them. You go and give them a big whack. It's like, that's where the abstraction, I think, really helps.
Right.
Is that it feels like this kind of abstract, like, well, of course I'm going to hit you. You're in the lead. And the person who's in the lead goes, fair enough.
Yeah, and I also feel like there's just that meta of, like, it's interesting how with certain games, like Cosmic example, you have so many different aliens in that and so many different things that you can draft as options, that it's almost like, you know, if you play the way we did, if you take two and choose one, it's like if you chose one that was, like, clearly horrible, like you basically were, like, signing yourself up to be getting bullied. And so it's funny how, you know, it's like, I think there is that, you know, I'm not going to argue, like, whether or not this game is balanced. I honestly, like, I've played it a bunch and I'm not good at, like, seeing that stuff.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't know. And my gut makes me feel like it is probably socially balanced enough that, like, there are powers that are very strong. But in most games, if you did that early on, it'd be so visible what you've done that everyone would probably gang up on you immediately.
Yeah.
And having this thing where they say, well, this faction is weaker than the other factions, it kind of, for me, it's an interesting one because you kind of almost get into the same territory of something like Twilight Imperium, right?
Sure.
Where, like, you do have factions where people are like, this one's kind of sucks. But then it's like, you play that one and you might win because people aren't going to bully you because you're not the problem one.
Because you're meta weaker.
Yeah, because you're like, you know, you are the issue. But then again, by the same merit, like, in talking about reviews that we do in a vacuum and then occasionally hit a wall with, like the first Twilight Imperium 4 expansion. I'm really excited to check out the new one. I've heard some good things about it. Mm-hmm. I want to go look at it again. But, like, in terms of how the community felt about that expansion and how we felt about it, well, how I felt about it, I played it a bunch and I was the one that did the thing. I did not align at all, and people were really annoyed about that and still are annoyed about that because from their perspective, they were like, the core game is really unbalanced.
Yeah.
This fixes all of the balance problems. But for me, it was that thing of, I'm like, I didn't notice that the core game is unbalanced because... We were already playing it on such a kind of in such a fast and loose vibesy way of people not being like, well, what's the optimal thing here? People just swinging at people and going, well, they're winning, kill them. And, you know, obviously that's not how I play every game, but there are certain types of games where I am, like, more than happy to slightly disengage my brain and be like, get them.
It is really interesting seeing how communities of players will take these games that are designed in this way of kind of being a little loose and less kind of strict on balance, and then kind of force balance onto them over time. Like Twilight Imperium, great example. example. Game that I think has kind of been vibesy from the beginning, but there's been this community around it that's demanded it become more and more and more competitive.
Yeah.
And much the same thing happened to Root as well. Like, it's designed as this sort of sandbox that has these powers that aren't necessarily perfectly tuned. It's more about how player relationships develop.
Yeah, because it's not, I mean, Root wasn't a game designed to be played like over and over and over again, right?
Right, but it has been.
I know, yeah, 100%.
And so now it's like a game that has this very, very sort of streamlined competitive rule set that's been built up around it because the community wants to have this like sharp and balanced experience. I guess my problem with Wrath isn't even necessarily like, outside of this one play. I guess that my bigger thing that made me not want to go back to it is that I've had games that have felt unbalanced or I've been stomped early on, but I've wanted to come back for more because I found the systems really interesting.
Yes.
And I think for me at least, I found that in the area control space, there are all these different kinds of games that are kind of their area control, but.
Yes.
And for me, at least, I think the but is normally what makes things really interesting mm-hmm. and the reason why I would play it over like El Grande, right? To me, at least, El Grande is kind of area control perfected. It is the simple, basic, you know, go here, claim this territory, do tactical considerations, get points. It's that you're not going to get much better than it. Even if you iterate hundreds and hundreds of times. But I think that where the excitement is for me is in these area control games that have a little twist on the formula, mm-hmm. a little reason to rankle it. Like Inish, for example, or Arx, or even like Memoir 44, I thought was like a game that I think does the like, I would like to push troops around on a map thing really, really well. It has that toy-like, risk-like factor. And so for me, at least, I didn't feel like there was much desire to return to it because what I'm looking for is the twist.
I get that.
The brass.
And I think that's like a really interesting distinction because there is awfully, there's a lot of overlap between the games that we like and enjoy on the site. And I think it's an interesting one that like, I think that, yeah, at the point I'm at now in my life, it's, I'm more interested in games for my collection that mean that when I have the people in my life want to play games, I have things that they will enjoy more than like things that are necessarily like the best ones, mm-hmm. you know, like, and I think it's about having that collection of things that's like diverse enough, but also specific. I think you had a really good point that when you start looking through the rules for Wrath, you realize that like, actually, because you were like, if I want to play an area control game, I'd just rather play El Grande, mm-hmm. which is a fair point, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the funny things about like, I was then talking to you about the fact that, you know, what are the words we use for this? And it seems kind of bonkers to be like, well, you know, this is area control, but also El Grande is area control. And they feel on the surface like completely different experiences. Mm-hmm. But you realize there's so much overlap in terms of what the game is and in terms of the mechanics
of
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet you put them next to each other mm-hmm. and you say, well, which one of these do you want to play to like the sort of people who I will be like trying to cater for with a fun board game afternoon.
Yeah.
They want to play the colorful one where the people with the skulls on the dice.
This
you know?
Is the thing. I think that they should reprint Hands of Teutonica in neon. Like, I think people would play that game if it...
I still want to go away, and if I ever have the time, maybe if I get put in prison, but with computers, I want to make my Hands of Pokemonica.
Whoa.
Like, a complete reskin of Hands of Teutonica, mainly themed off the idea... yeah, mainly themed off the idea that the round tokens that you use to block the roads are Snorlaxes.
Obviously.
That's the only idea I have so far, but I think it's enough, goddammit.
Yeah. Let's make it happen.
I think we should make it happen.
And that is the end of this week's episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you want bonus stuff out of Shut Up and Sit Down, if you want more from these boys, then you can check out our website or our Patreon for access to bonus content such as bonus videos and a little bonus newsletter that goes out every month featuring some truly deranged English town fan fiction.
That's
from
I don't
none
know,
other than Matthew Lees.
I don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing weird. There's nothing weird going on in the newsletter. I don't know why people keep saying there's something weird with the newsletter. Don't look at it.
Just don't say that.
Just don't look at it. Yeah, the newsletter, every month we're going to be telling you about three games that are coming up on the podcast or in videos, so you can get a little sneak peek on what we're going to be talking about in the future and also getting some video stuff. In the past couple of months, we've had Tom going through his top five games of the year last year, and I'm doing mine as well. So
we
got my top five
games of the year every month. It's our top five games of the year.
Oh, maybe we have to do a video halfway through where we actually try and fight to make our own top five, because I think that would get messy.
That would get
I think we might end up, maybe that's a bad idea,
the canonical top 10
probably. We probably end up like killing each other.
Someone would die.
Yeah, I think so. Because I know that on both of our lists, there's at least one game that like the other person would be like, that's not going on anywhere near it.
Interesting.
We'd have to have a DMZ, I think. You know, we'd have to have like like an area where we're not going to discuss where we think about these games because they don't exist.
Okay, yeah, I like that.
We'll real Cold War stuff, you know, real Cold War stuff. Like nasty, nasty, nasty.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.